Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig tvärkulturell.
Absolut interkulturell.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.
Welcome to episode 101 of Absolutely Intercultural. Who would have thought 4 years ago, when we had the idea during a European project meeting in Spain, that we would ever pass the 100 episode mark? I'm very proud of our achievement and would like to thank my co-host Anne Fox in Denmark for her inspiring endurance. And of course, all the others who have contributed behind the scenes, like our current editor, Dino Nogarole, who will soon start his own semester abroad at the University of Leon in Spain, where this podcast actually started. I would also like to thank literally thousands of listeners around the world for supporting us and renewing our motivation to search for new stories and interview partners whose ideas we like to share with you. And last but not least, I would like to thank the main contributors, our interviewees, who deliver the input for this intercultural podcast. Now, regular listeners may remember that right in our first year in 2006, we received the very prestigious Weblogs Award in the category Best Audio Blog. And now we've recently been nominated again for the European Podcast Award. And here we will need your help. If you like this podcast, please go to our website at absolutely-intercultural.com and see how you can vote for us in this competition. Now, this episode comes to you from Australia again. Yes, I know we are all here. Roger Federer, Lance Armstrong, Prince William, and myself also. Oops, I have to be careful. In this country, people seem to have invented the tall poppy syndrome. In the Xenophobe's Guide to the Aussies, we can read, "Every Aussie knows that all champions are conceited and therefore deserve to be knocked off their pedestal." This is the tall poppy syndrome. Stand out from the crowd and you'll be cut down to size. Trying to grow is admirable. Actually succeeding is inexcusable. So I will try to be modest and find out more about the culture of the lucky country. What better opportunity than the upcoming public holiday on the 26th of January? In our first category today, Absolutely Down Under, I'm trying to find out more about the Australian culture and identity, which is celebrated next Tuesday, Australia Day.
I think the government is trying to make us a little bit more patriotic and make us be aware of that we are Australian.
In our second category, Absolutely Borrowed, we will listen to a roundtable discussion with lecturers at the University of Brighton who talk about empathy and what it means to put yourself in someone else's shoes, or as we called it in a European project, to borrow somebody else's identity.
How does it feel to be somebody else? You know, that goes, as Jess said, with the empathy, you know. So you've got to understand that person before you can, you know, think about it and borrow their identity.
Yes,
In our third category, Absolutely Diplomatic, I met John Kettler from the Brock University in Canada. He explained why sometimes, as a visitor, it may be better not to share your negative feelings with the inhabitants of the country you're visiting.
Because if I gave you my opinion of Germany, you might not be happy.
Like my two previous shows, this one also comes to you from Australia. As I get woken up by exotic birds outside my bedroom window every morning, I thought I should record my introduction at this time of the day to share this wonderful experience with you, because this has become my regular Australian alarm clock. Yes, these are actually birds, not monkeys, as I thought on my first morning here, when I was woken up by this incredible noise and was actually a little frightened because it was so loud. As I live only a couple of hundred meters from the national park, I assumed they must have some kind of noisy monkeys in that park, until I discovered it was birds, such as cockatoos, cockaburras, and some very colorful parrots that I cannot identify. After a month in the country, I actually managed to sleep through this. And if I didn't, I would have to get up at 4:30 every morning when the concert starts. I only learned this week that my class and tutorial next week will not take place because of Australia Day, a national public holiday. So I started asking people what this national day is all about. And I received many, but sometimes very contradictory answers, because while this day is meant to promote and celebrate national unity, it seems that every year it is accompanied by criticism that instead of promoting multiculturalism, by its very history, this day commemorates the 26th of January 1788, the arrival of the first fleet at Sydney Cove, where the English settlers put up their flag. So opponents tend to call it Invasion Day and propose to change the national public holiday to another date. Let me share with you what some Australians told me about Australia Day.
Australia Day is a day to reflect and appreciate the laid-back lifestyle that we've come to enjoy in Australia, having barbecues and going to the beach.
Yay, it gives us a free day off work. We get a holiday.
I don't know, it's just a day for a bunch of mates to come together, have a barbecue and drink all day. And for people my age anyway, they play the Triple J Hottest 100. If you've got Triple J as a radio station, they pick out the best 100 songs from 2009 and they play that on Australia Day. Uh-huh. So people actually come together, have a barbecue, drink, and just listen to that, the whole 100 songs.
Now, would anybody like to say what you think the government is trying to achieve with this? I mean, why is there an Australia Day? What do you think?
I think the government is trying to make us a little bit more patriotic and make us be aware of that we are Australian, because they're putting out flags. So they're just trying to make us aware of our heritage and to be proud to be Australian.
I think it's a day too that we can come together as a nation and just spend that day reflecting and celebrating our uniqueness as a country and our multicultural aspects of our community. And I think our uniqueness is not just within the people, but it's also within the landscape, because you know we have beautiful oceans, you know, Great Barrier Reef, rainforests, deserts, and I think that also reflects in the personality of each person in Australia. So that we are not just beautiful, but we're also, you know, rugged and rough.
Are you expected to celebrate these points of uniqueness, like, for example, the cultural diversity?
They expect us to do Aussie stuff, like eating meat pies and lamingtons and having a lamb on a barbecue. It's not too serious. You're not meant to be, you know, all deep about this. It's meant to be having fun and just doing the things that are not necessarily Australian, but they've adapted as being Australian, like pies and lamingtons and Vegemite and lamb on
lamb
a barbecue.
Shops. And everywhere you go, you see people with their Australian flags out of their cars, and you're expected to wear stubbies, thongs, and hats with corkscrews on them to keep the flies away.
And cricket at the beach. Play cricket on the beach.
We are, as a nation, celebrating one aspect of Australia on one day at the same time.
It is just a time to actually remember it, because, you know, we do the same stuff all year round, but we don't realise how lucky we are to be doing that. Whereas on Australia Day, you know, we're like, wow, we can actually do this in perfect weather, you know, with a bunch of mates.
Does cultural diversity come into the Australia Day, or is it more like a patriotic day?
Australia Day is when it's acceptable to be jingoistic and nationalistic, and it's a white Australia view of what it is to be Australian. There's no cultural diversity in Australia.
What it means to be Australians, but does it also include our Indigenous Australians? How do they feel about Australia Day? Do they celebrate these things with us?
I've been invited to join a group on Facebook, which is like, it's actually Rape, Pillage and Murder Day. It's not Australia Day, it's Invasion and Rape, Pillage and Murder Day. And a lot of Indigenous Australians, I think, and maybe a lot of white Australians see it in that light as well. What are we actually celebrating here? Walking into a country and wiping out the locals and taking over?
Unfortunately, that's a view that a lot of other countries have, and that's why it's important to actually have an Australia Day, so that we can celebrate all the good aspects, and I think really what they're trying to promote is the positive side of being Australian.
Do you reckon like the Indigenous Australians come into it as well? Is that like, have you celebrated with Indigenous Australians?
We're not celebrating the fact that we invaded this country. This is a day that we're supposed to all come together and just celebrate the fact that we're here now.
I think Pam may have a point here. Maybe the celebration next week should be a reflection of the present and maybe a pointer to the future. Now, we've heard a lot about the Australian identity, and I will come back to that at the end of the show. But have you ever thought about your own identity? Or about borrowing another person's identity to see what it is like to live the life of somebody else? Have you ever marveled about what your life would have been like if you had grown up in another culture? Well, let us talk about a European project which we finished last year together with students in Sweden, Spain, England, Lithuania and Hungary. Now, before starting the project, I went to Brighton to plan this European project, which was called Borrowed Identities. I got together with Vi, Lily, Jessica and Ross from the School of Languages at the University of Brighton. We discussed whether it is possible to borrow an identity or not, and what identity really is, and how Ben Kingsley and Gandhi fit into this picture. In our category, absolutely borrowed, let's start with a more philosophical part.
Well, borrowed identities, the question that we have been trying to figure out is, can we borrow identities? Is it possible? And what do we mean by identities? For me, identity is very precious and personal. At the same time, it is very cultural as well. So generally, identity would carry history with it. So from my point of view, so the borrowing, the word borrowing is an issue. I don't know what you guys think.
Well, the question is, why would we want to borrow identity? We've got to, you know, define that. I mean, we are going to do a project, and that is part of the fact that we're sitting here and talking. So we might want to borrow identity because we want to show how it is different to be a British person or a German person. But there could be other issues.
I think the idea in this case is that we're asking our students to take on a different cultural identity or persona in order to get them to develop their empathy with a certain kind of an identity or a certain cultural identity. And that's what we're hoping that they'll do, but that by researching a certain area and taking on the traits and kind of embedding themselves in a different culture, that they'll be able to borrow an identity and therefore understand that identity more clearly.
And then the question is, if they're only sort of taking on superficial aspects of someone's identity, to what extent does that actually allow people to have empathy? For example, if they, say, live with another family for 1 week or so and, you know, eat their food and do their routines, how much of an insight does that actually give them to the identity of the host culture?
But the question is it borrowing identity or is it just finding out certain characteristics about a particular group of people? So what do we mean by identity? Is it just characteristics or somebody being late or being on time? Are these very personal or are these a cultural thing?
Well, it is also the fact that how does it feel to be somebody else? You know, that goes, as Jess said, with the empathy, you know. So you've got to understand that person before you can, you know, think about it and borrow their identity.
Yes, I agree. I think that's right. And also it's this idea, I mean, we were saying earlier about if an actor is trying to take on the role of another character, say Ben Kingsley in Gandhi, you know, he tried to take on some of the actual beliefs that Gandhi did and, you know, became a vegetarian, and you were saying that still doesn't mean that he has taken on Gandhi's identity, but also I'm sure that there is part of him that, because he tried to live and breathe in that way, he obviously did take on some of that identity as well. He wasn't Gandhi, but he got as close as he possibly could to understanding what it was like to be Gandhi, and to me that's what we're kind of trying to encourage here, maybe not to that level, and that to me is kind of enough for borrowing identities. But you're not so sure, are you?
No, because it is not about living, it's about, especially with Gandhi and Ben Kingsley, well, Gandhi had actually faced
racial discrimination, and he has gone through the process of having to deal with it, whereas Ben Kingsley comes and takes on just that, the being a vegetarian and being, I don't know, going in loincloth or something like that. So it's not necessarily, it does, I mean, he has taken some aspect of it in order to understand.
The metaphor of the actor as someone who borrows an identity seems striking. We heard this comparison again last week when Meryl Streep, the American actress, at the Golden Globe celebration, humbly said of herself, "I'm really the vessel for other people's stories and other women's lives." Personally, I've always linked the idea of borrowed identities to being abroad in a different culture and somehow trying to get to grips with a foreign culture by slowly adopting bits of cultural behavior that we see in those people we communicate with. Now, more often than not, this is a very painful learning process driven by trial and error. Have you ever been to a foreign country and criticized the system or the people of that country? Well, if you have not made the mistake yourself, I'm sure you have seen your compatriots fall into this trap. I discussed with John Cadler how we would react if a guest from a foreign country would criticize our country and our habits. In our category, absolutely diplomatic, John suggests that if someone asks you your opinion about politics, sometimes it may be better to keep your mouth shut instead of sharing negative impressions about the host country. Listen to his experiences, which he made as a Canadian in the United States.
Well, I'll give the example of when I was doing graduate school in the United States. And it's an example of, even though you're living there, don't ever make the mistake of thinking that you have the same rights as the people there. This was the time when Ronald Reagan was running for president of the United States, and we were in the Mensa, and one of my American friends asked me what I thought about Ronald Reagan. And so I said, well, I have my own opinion, but I'm not an American, so I will keep my opinion to myself. I was just being very polite. And then I heard a chair scrape behind me, and a woman got up and she stood behind me and said, "I heard that. Where do you think you are, in Russia? You know, we have freedom of speech here. So your friend asked you a question and you should be able to answer that question." And so I said, "Oh, I'm very sorry." Mm-hmm. So I answered my friend, and boy, was she upset because I did not say what she had hoped.
So first she invited you to speak your mind, and then she wasn't happy with what you said.
Yeah, exactly. So it's really, another example would be, when I come to Germany, I sometimes have people say, "Well, what do you think about Germany?" Mm. Well, you're not asking me really for my opinion of Germany, because if I gave you my opinion of Germany, you might not be happy. Okay. Might not be happy. But what you're really asking me is to say something nice about Germany. In the same way, if you come to Canada and I say, "What do you think about Canada?" And you say, "Oh, it's too cold. The people are too busy, blah, blah, blah." Mm-hmm. Then I don't want to hear that.
Right.
I want to hear something nice.
Is that probably reserved to the people who live there? Because they reserve the right to be critical of their own country. Yeah. And they often like it. At least Germans like to be. If you ask Germans what they think about the country, they will be very critical, actually. But you're saying, but maybe they wouldn't want to nod while other people say the same things.
Yeah, you have the right to criticize your own country, but I don't have the right.
Right.
And it also goes across racial lines, where, and I've lived as a visible minority in many countries, and you might have someone from a certain racial background being very critical, objectively critical. You know, this is wrong with my country because my people are not doing this, or my people are doing that, but that does not give me an opening to say, "So you're right. And furthermore, you know, and add to it, boy, will I get in trouble. Okay, you can criticize your country, you can criticize your race, you can tell jokes about your own people. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean I can.
But the visitor cannot.
No.
Well, actually, I was in a similar situation once where I was teaching a Brazilian in Germany, and I was teaching him German, and he used me as a psychiatrist most of the time, actually, because he was very unhappy. Mm. And I remember I was in a similar situation. He was going on and on about how everything was awful in Germany, and he had waited for the children's allowance to come through for more than 6 weeks or something. And then I said, oh, come on. Is that really faster in Brazil? And he looked at me and said, well, we don't have that.
Exactly.
And so somehow he thought he could complain about it, although they don't even have that allowance in his own country. Mm-hmm. And I must say, at that moment, I also thought, who is he to criticize something which they don't even have in their own country? Mm-hmm. So I can sympathize with that. Mm-hmm. There I was feeling that he probably didn't have the right to criticize it. I should have criticized it.
Can I give you an example of misunderstanding?
Mm-hmm.
This is going back a few years ago at my university. We had a student from a certain country, and she was studying psychology, first year psychology, so she had never studied psychology before. And she was feeling a bit homesick, never been away from home before. And so she would spend a good half an hour a day in my office. And I thought it was important to listen to her, to speak with her, so that she would feel comfortable about her studies. And then after a few days, she came back and I asked her how things were. And she said, oh, everything is going okay now, except my psychology. So I said, what's wrong with your psychology? And she said, well, the professor doesn't know anything. Okay. And I know the professor, and he won one of the prestigious 3M teaching awards for Ontario. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's written books. You know, clearly he knows what he's talking about. And clearly she didn't know what she was talking about. But I knew also that she didn't know. So I said, why do you think he doesn't know anything? So rather than getting critical against her, why do you think he doesn't know anything? And she said, well, it's obvious. He wears blue jeans to lectures. Uh-huh. And so in her country, only laborers wear blue jeans.
And she couldn't accept him in his jeans.
Nope. So even though you might be very intelligent, you might have prepared your lessons very well, if you're wearing the wrong thing, perhaps you're saying the wrong thing.
Now let us come back to Australia Day. I asked my new Australian mate, Len, what he thought this public holiday is all about, because I did not really know what to do and where the origins really were.
Well, funny you should say that, because I was talking to my wife just the day before yesterday about the significance of Australia Day, and she was of the opinion that the 26th of January was the date that Australia was actually discovered by Captain Cook, where I was always of the opinion that that was the date of the first fleet arriving in Botany Bay in Sydney, or Sydney Harbour.
Yeah.
So that sort of started a conversation, and my wife was going to Google that information, but to this moment, I don't think she's done that.
Right.
So, but that was always my impression, that Australia Day was a celebration of the date that Australia was actually colonised by virtue of the First Fleet.
I noticed that somehow there seems to be an agenda, that somehow the government wants to achieve something through that Australia Day. Would you be able to describe that a little?
I think that what the government is trying to do is make a one of the country, a family as such, a pride, which it always has been, but with sort of multiculturalism and so forth, and there's been the problems that go with it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the Australian government is trying to nurture this, like even now you see a lot of miniature Australian flags, which 10 or 15 years ago you wouldn't have seen that. You would have seen it in odd little groupings, but now you'll see quite a lot of shops with Australia flags on it, and cars going around with flags on their aerials.
So what is this thing about barbecue and Australia Day?
Australia has always been predominantly an outdoor country where barbecues... I'll come over to your place, Lawrence, and we'll have a barbecue.
Okay.
And I think that they're trying to sort of knit Australia Day as an outdoors picnic, barbecue, fun type day.
Do you think that maybe the barbecue could be the common denominator, the link between all these parts of society? city and countryside, bush, I don't know, indigenous communities, white communities, etc.?
I think what the significance is that doesn't matter what social level you may be on, I believe that always a barbecue is acceptable. Whether you have a barbecue sausage or a barbecue fillet steak is another thing, but a barbecue is always acceptable by any strata of society.
I've already noticed that some politicians have started doing special Australia Day speeches. Anything else that we can expect from the government at that point?
Yes, people that have come from other countries that have applied for permanent residency and citizenship here, they are awarded their certificate of citizenship on Australia Day.
On that day, okay.
And I think that is quite significant as a day that Australia sort of celebrates, people sort of welcoming new citizens, permanent citizens.
Well, we've arrived at the end of the show today. I would like to remind you that on our website at absolutely-intercultural.com, you can find more information about the European Podcast Award we have been nominated for and how you can support us by voting for us. Our next show will be coming to you from Anne Fox in Denmark on the 5th of February. Until then, bleiben Sie absolut interkulturell. Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig interkulturell.
Absolut interkulturell.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.